When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello, welcome to our new show, not football related, where we're going to talk about a different thing every month. The show is a collaboration between The Square Ball and Andy's Man Club. Andy's Man Club slogan is, it's okay to talk, hence the name of the show. This time we're talking about money. It's okay to talk about money. Andy's Man Club, if you don't know, is a men's suicide prevention charity offering free-to-attend peer-to-peer support groups across the UK and online, as well as Michael being here from The Square Ball. Ollie's here from Andy's Man Club. What is the point of Andy's Man Club then, Ollie, very briefly, if you can just explain what it is you do?
So we provide talking groups for men up and down the UK. We've currently got just short of 120 groups, but it's just a safe place for guys to come and talk about anything that might be bothering them, any feelings, emotions, problems that they've got that they might not want to talk about at home, at work, with the friends, or in those other social circles. Just a safe, non-judgmental environment to bring guys together, to hopefully prevent them from getting to that crisis point in the first place.
Your groups meet every Monday, apart from bank holidays, 7 o'clock, places across the country. Details, andysmanclub.co.uk. Yeah, go back as well. We started before Christmas. We spoke about Christmas on the first show that we did. So if you're not feeling particularly festive, which you might not be in January, you can go back and listen to that, where we just dug into some of the issues and had a bit of a laugh, I think, about, Michael, your experience of a Peruvian Christmas.
It was nice, the pig in a bath, the scary dad and all that, but that was good.
Through this series of shows, we are just going to talk about sort of day-to-day issues and look at some of the stuff that comes up, some of the stuff maybe that appears in the groups as well, Ollie, Andy's Man Club, just have a chat about them, share some stories, hopefully have a bit of a laugh. January, financial pressures. We're around that time of year now where people are feeling really, really skint, back end of January, and Blue Monday is the thing you wanted to address, isn't it, right from the off? So we'll lead off on that, because we've just had Blue Monday, which, if you don't know what it is, well, what is it?
It's a fallacy, is what it is.
Well, the idea, it was a professor, wasn't it, who came up with it for a holiday company to try and flog holidays, basically saying this is the time of the year, the day of the year when you are saddest overall, you're most depressed. But it was with a means to try and sell holidays, so to cheer you up.
Yeah, basically. It was to get people to part with the money. And I don't personally like the idea that this is the worst day of the year. This is the day that you're going to be sad. So we're going to tell you that you're going to be sad on this day. Well, it might not be for everybody, quite simply, you know.
Well, yeah, 2023 was the 16th of January, so fairly recently. Did you feel particularly miserable?
Seemed all right.
Yeah?
I thought.
You managed to get through it?
Yeah, reading through Jesse's press conference stuff, that's always a bit tough. That was the day we were reading over him saying it was our best performance and all that, wasn't it?
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that,
let's try and steer away from the football.
Other than Leeds United, it was fine.
We don't want to drag everything down to Leeds United levels. So we're talking about money because, yeah, I say a lot of people feeling the pinch in January. What's your relationship like with money? Because I'm kind of fascinated by this, because we joke about you being like the Pontefract's tightest man, Michael. But we've spoken quite a lot off air about money and our relationship to it, haven't we? As well, because I think yours and mine are vastly different.
You stress me out with your way of dealing with money and your descriptions of past spending habits. It's funny, I went to Temple Newsome with the kids at the weekend, and we drove past a pub that we met in a few years ago now when we were kind of first getting Square Ball set up, and it was the place where you first detailed your various levels of debt. And I remember just leaving that place and thinking, Jesus Christ.
You got more stressed about it than I did.
I instantly set about trying to find solutions for it. I was like, well, this can't go on. Yeah. You need to sort this out. But it was just an amount that you kind of built up and you were just paying it. But you're paying so much, it panicked me. It was keeping me awake at night, was your debt situation at the time. So.
Oh yeah, we were paying over a grand and a half every month on just servicing debt, and probably about a third of it was paying it down, but Most of it was just a standstill on credit cards. We just got into that spiral because I've been self-employed. You know, obviously I spent years as a DJ and then did the radio as well. But to do my job in Newcastle, the radio was so expensive that I was chucking like £600 or £700 a month on initially car hire, which went on credit cards just to be able to get there. Then bought another cheap car and sort of ran it. And I was doing £700 or something like that a month on fuel. So I was actually, although I was earning quite well, a lot of it was already going out, and car maintenance was like through the roof and all the rest of it. But that was on top of, as a DJ, you know, like I'm in my 40s now and I quit DJing. I thought I need to stop before I'm 40 because it's sad being a 40-year-old man in a nightclub. You don't need to do that anymore. So I did, I packed it in. But over those years, you know, as the work sort of diminishes, as you get older into your 30s and your 40s, because you can't do student nights anymore, can you, midweek? And obviously with changes in the sort of general financial landscape, students have got less money to go out with. So the work all just gradually dropped off, but the debt had sort of accumulated to the point where we'd never paid it down in time. And it became such a burden that we couldn't afford to pay it off, if that made sense. I'll get to the debt management plan, which we're doing and we're still midway through now. But yeah, it's interesting talking to you about it because it really, really stressed you out. I think my stress built up from it over a number of years, which contributed to, as I spoke on the show last month, about getting involved in therapy as well. And it was part of the reason why my stress levels were so high, because I got booted from the radio when everything got networked. And suddenly I was staring down the barrel of having no job and needing to pay quite a lot of money back to banks and various, you know, loan companies or whatever.
Yeah, the contrast with me is that I've just been dead sensible. Oh, I think your lifestyle went to a point that you sort of maintained beyond when you could. I think I always just kept mine to such a crap level. I know when I was applying for a mortgage, they go through like affordability stuff with you on the phone, and the woman couldn't believe how little I was spending on stuff.
This can't be right.
Because they go through and they're like, how much are you spending on, like, what's your one Sky? And I was like, oh, I don't have it. How much is your mobile phone? Like, tenner. How much are you spending on a gym? Don't have one. She was like, well, do you spend money on anything else? And I was like, well, yeah, like, going older and stuff, but I don't have any kind of ongoing stuff. She's like, have you got a car on finance? Like, nah. any other loans? No. Any credit cards? No. She's just like, well, okay, I suppose there's nothing really you could cut out if you, because they go through the affordability saying like, you can afford this now, but what if X, Y, and Z, don't they?
If you cut back like, your lifestyle.
Like, what could you cut back on? I was like, well, not a lot really, I don't suppose. I could go on like no holidays and stuff, but that'd be all right.
Do you feel like you missed out at all?
Not really.
Do you think they're sort of driven by some sort of fear of debt, of overspending?
I think, and it's completely unfounded as well, because I've never been in debt. My parents were never in debt. It's not like I've got horrible childhood stories of like bailiffs at the door and that's where panic is driven from. I don't know. I just think I've always been worried about it. And I don't like the idea of owing people like anything. To the extent there is, if someone's lent me a tenner, I'll be very quickly trying to give them it back. I don't tend to like stuff drifting on like that. And I'll be, I don't know, I think I like other people to be cautious with money as well, in a weird way. I'm always like, no, you should want this back because it's yours. And I get the same when around birthdays and Christmas as well, if people are trying to buy stuff, because I'm like, you know, age I am. I've got my own money. If I want something, I'll just buy it myself. Like, I don't feel the need
You'll
to.
You'll buy the right thing as well.
I'll buy the right thing, exactly. If someone's trying to buy me something, I'm like, nah, I don't, like, I'll buy it myself. And I don't want you buying something frivolous, because if I won't buy it for myself, I don't want you spending your money on that either, if that makes sense.
You're in a situation, Ollie, where you've had a bit of money troubles. You've been on the rocks a bit, but you've cleared it all up and you're now in a position to get mortgages.
Yeah. Yeah, it's somewhere that I never thought I'd be, to be honest. My relationship with money has been quite stressful over the years. In fact, I think money was one of the things that contributed to my own depression. It was that self-fulfilling prophecy of got myself in debt and then couldn't afford to pay off the debt. So was becoming more upset about that. And the more upset I got about it, the sort of less I really gave a shit about it and just carried on spending more. And one of the ways that I tried to deal with my depression was to buy things to make myself feel better, which obviously when you're in debt, isn't really a great thing to do in hindsight, but it seemed like a brilliant idea at the time. But yeah, I went through quite a long period of not having very much. So I've just cut back on absolutely everything. Once I started addressing the debt problems after burying my head in the sand for quite a long time about it, I was unable to get any credit whatsoever. I spent 5 or 6 years with no credit available to me, just living off my actual income whilst paying off the outstanding debt. And then from there, it was another couple of years of rebuilding that credit rating, which was absolutely through the floor, to a point where I could actually start to get a decent amount of credit again. And now, like I say, I'm in the position where I'm currently trying to buy my first home. We've had a mortgage approved, and it's a position I never thought I'd get to. I genuinely never thought I did. When I was in debt, we chatted about this a little bit earlier, but you feel like you're never going to get out of that cycle. I felt like I was never going to be able to buy a house, never going to be able to buy a car, never going to be able to afford the things that I really wanted in life, because I had this black mark against my name. So to be able to work through that and get to a position that I wanted to be is really rewarding, I guess. It's something to be
proud
of.
Huge sense of achievement.
Yeah, massive, absolutely massive. And, you know, it's something that I really want to share with other people, because when you are trapped in it, you do feel like it'll go on forever.
Do you remember what it felt like to have no control over your finances?
Yeah, there were other factors as well, but ultimately I wanted to kill myself. I did not want to be here anymore. It was some pressure that was far too much for me to take as a man. I wasn't speaking to anybody about it. It was just something that I dealt with as far as I could and as much as I could by myself. And it got to a point where it was no longer manageable. So I just started ignoring the letters, stopped paying the bills, and obviously made it a hell of a lot worse for myself in the long run. But there was an underlying sense of dread, and it was constant for maybe 4 or 5 years before I actually started addressing the problem.
I can relate to all this, yes.
It just never went away. And as I said, you know, those are the points where I was at my lowest, where I couldn't see a way out of it, and I genuinely didn't want to be here anymore. It was only when I started addressing those issues that I could then start addressing my mental health as well, because the two do go hand in hand. And the more I worried about it, the worse I felt, and the less willing I had to do anything about it. It did actually get to a point where I thought, you know, well, I'm not going to be here next year, so there's no point in
so it doesn't
trying
matter.
To yeah, curb any of it. I might as well just do what I need to do for the time being. And it's a bleak place to be. It really, really is. And looking back now, you know, I'm glad that I did manage to get things sorted out.
Was there a thing or a moment that tipped you over into addressing it? Because that's the hardest thing, isn't it? It's like with so many of these things, is confronting the issue itself rather than running away from it. And, you know, it goes back to difficulties around Christmas and families that we spoke about like last month. It's the same with this, isn't it? Is getting a grip of that sense of control, and that comes back as soon as you deal with it head on.
There was a change in my living circumstances. I went through quite a messy breakup, which left me homeless for about 8 months. And when I eventually got my own flat, was a point when I was determined to make things right. I was determined to sort of get back on my feet after, you know, relying on other people for such a long time. And this new flat for me was a clean start, if you like. It was a place of my own. I didn't have to worry about whoever else was living there or having to agree on anything or argue over things. It was my space that I could do whatever I wanted in. And ultimately, that was the turning point for me to... I knew that I didn't want to live in this council flat for forever. So I needed to sort of pull things together a little bit and manage things and address these things head on. And coincidentally, it was about the same time that I started attending Andy's Man Club when I was in that flat. So I had conversations with other guys who'd been through other similar things, and it inspired me to make that change in myself as well. I'd seen that it wasn't impossible to get out of that situation, and hearing their stories gave me a little bit of knowledge, really, a little bit of wisdom of somebody who'd been through the same situation to be able to make the right decisions and take the right actions for myself as well.
I guess it's very difficult to get a turning point, though, because it's so quick to get into debt. But when you look at maybe what you've built up and the road ahead of it is very long. I mean, how many years is it, say, from that point to getting a mortgage?
Probably about eight.
Like it's a hell of a long time, isn't it, to dedicate to it, but it's breaking that spiral is almost the most, that's probably almost the best bit of it, when you make the choice to be like, okay, today I'm going to start putting this right.
And that's the thing, it's dictated by your credit record, isn't it? And stuff stays on there for 6 years. So if you default on a payment or whatever, that's the point at which you're 6 years from that point onwards. And I said, with the debt management plan that we're in, we're sort of midway through it now, be done in another sort of 3 years or whatever. But until then, we can't borrow and we're in that place. But actually, do you know what? Getting the sense of control back has been so important, and we're now living within our means. Mm. And the sense of control and the sense of joy of living within your means and thinking, I don't have to worry month to month about I've overspent on that, and at some point in the future, I'm going to have to pay it back, but I'm just going to pretend it's not there for now. is it's so huge, is that flipping over into that mental space. I think
there's such a relief that comes with it, in there, with actually knowing that you don't have to hide from it anymore, that you don't have to sort of shelter away from it. Once I started tackling those problems, once I made that initial phone call to a debt management company, it was like a massive weight had been lifted off my shoulders, because it was something that I'd been putting off for years and years and years.
Same.
Worrying about for, you know, every waking minute, struggling to get to sleep at night over it. And then as soon as I did, I thought, why the hell didn't I do that sooner? Why didn't I do that sooner?
Yeah. I went through Step Change. You were based in Leeds, actually. And they are brilliant. They're a charity, so they don't take any money from doing the stuff that they do. And God, it's so simple to do. It's just worth reiterating that, you know, there are consequences, like financially and to your status, and particularly if you go for, so like, for example, a debt management plan is an informal arrangement with your creditors, but they write to them all on your behalf. You pay them one payment a month, and then they distribute it according to the calculations you work out based on your budget, which is dead straightforward, and they're really, really helpful with
it. And it's not a consolidation loan, is it?
Absolutely not. No, it's if you think actually where interest rates have been going recently, it's good, because in most cases, I think with ours, all the interest has been stopped, the accounts have been cancelled, and we're now just in a process of working with like the collection departments just to repay the stuff at an affordable rate. And we've probably brought our outgoing payments down to about a third of what they were, but it's all going on getting repaid now. Yeah. And you attack it so much quicker when you do that. Like IVA as well, an involuntary, can't remember the exact wording of it, I should have written this down before we started recording, but the involuntary agreement, have a look for me, will you, while I'm talking about this, an IVA is more serious, and it's sort of a halfway house between a debt management plan and like bankruptcy. It's a formal legal agreement, as is bankruptcy as well. But they are all there available to you, depending on what your needs are and how bad that your finances can be. But they will advise, like Step Change will advise you on what the right route is out of this.
It's an individual voluntary arrangement.
That's the one.
An IVA.
Yeah, but that's a legal agreement, whereas like a debt management plan is an informal agreement with your creditors. So, but this is all explained to you. I mean, I'm not an expert in this by any stretch of the imagination. I just know that I've benefited hugely from engaging in this process and getting back that sense of control.
Yeah, like, and Step Change are a charity, aren't they?
They do not take a penny out of it.
They are neutral people as well to speak to and can give you advice. And it is just worth speaking to someone, because it can be just an insurmountable amount of information, can't it? You can look at various ways of shifting debt around and stuff, but just speak to some people who know.
Yeah, that's it. Because we tried to consolidate and move stuff around for years, but eventually you run out of options and you realise you're up to your eyeballs, it's too deep, you just need to deal with it.
I think what you found as well is that essentially they go to credit card companies and say, you can have this back, or you're going to force them to be bankrupt, you'll have none of it back. From the credit card's point of view, they've already had their pound of flesh, haven't they? Because you've been paying your interest many times over. I don't know if you've ever worked out how much you've probably paid back over the years.
I don't want to know.
They've had their money, haven't they? Yeah, that's the thing.
And they will get back what they're owed, even if they don't get all the massive amounts of interest on top.
Exactly.
And the thing is with Step Change as well, they're on your side. But I think they are actually, as a charity, they are partly funded by the credit agencies as well as other individual donors. I don't know, I'd have to double check that.
I think they are, and I think it makes sense, because, you know, if like me, you just stop paying altogether, then they're not getting anything. Whereas if you can come to an arrangement where you make affordable monthly payments, then at least they're gonna get it back. And it helps both ends, doesn't it? It helps you guys and it helps them close the account as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that, you know, going forward, it's going to be completely different and never, ever going to entertain that scenario again. I will take credit, because you sort of need it to function in this world, don't you? But it's always going to be sensible and within limits. You know, if even stuff like having a credit card so you can hire a car abroad, which is nigh on impossible to do without a credit card, just having that to fall back on. But getting back in control of everything has been so important. And it was as simple as, like, you know, sitting down and talking to them. You can either do it online or you can do it on the phone, just doing a budget, everything that's coming in, everything that's going out, work out what's left and you go from there. But they're, you know, they're sympathetic and they allow you to sort of move what's coming in and going out. And if your expenses go up one month, if your washing machine breaks, you need to get a new one, they'll allow you to sort of tweak things for a month or two to get stuff back in order. So it's a hugely, hugely valuable service. So if you are struggling with money, seriously, just look up StepChange. I think StepChange.org are absolutely brilliant. Can recommend them completely. I mentioned budget in there as well. Is it something you do, or do you not now? Because part of debt management is budgeting monthly. Like, so we've worked out a budget, which you have to stick to as part of the agreement. Is it something you do in your day-to-day life?
It's not really. I think because I'm quite, I suppose my default is fairly thrifty.
Yeah, you're some way off ever.
I'm kind of, and like between me and my wife, we've got kind of a decent enough income. So I sort of don't worry too much if I felt like I was spending was getting out of control, I might start looking at it a bit more. I suppose I'd look for budgeting for, like, if I'm booking a holiday or something, I'll be then thinking, okay, well, that's going to be an amount due now, an amount due in 6 months or whatever. I suppose I look at that sort of stuff for budgeting just to make sure there's going to be enough there. But no, I don't. I suppose I'm fortunate insofar as I don't feel like I go around the supermarket going, all right, I've only got 80 quid here and I can't go over it.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What about you, Ollie? Do you, now you've kind of come out the other side of this and you're in that mortgage headspace, do you find that you're a little bit more careful with budgeting?
A little bit. I budget very loosely. I know roughly, I've got two bank accounts and I've got one that the bills come out of and one which I spend money out of. My wage gets paid into the one that I spend money out of and I just transfer
all that month
enough to cover the bills for that month. Yeah. And then whatever's left is gone within a week.
Yeah, in fairness, that's the arrangement I have as well with, you know, an amount of what I earn goes into a joint account and all the bills and stuff come out of that and shopping and stuff comes out of that and there's enough in there that it covers it.
I tell you it's a mad exercise to do. You don't, even if you're not fully budgeting, is to sit down and work out what you're spending at a supermarket every month. And because, like, you know, a lot of phone and banking apps now have categories, don't they, for stuff. And make, so it makes this process easy. You can just have a look on your phone at what you're spending month to month. But if you ever sit down and actually write it down, that's a fun exercise.
I don't believe you.
Tongue firmly in cheek. Yeah, we once did it because our nearest supermarket was Sainsbury's. So for ages, it'd be a case of popping in. Then what we were doing, we were going in like 4, 5, maybe 6 times a week and you're burning through 20, 30 quid at a time, if not more. It's easily done, particularly now with the way that food prices and supermarket prices are going. And we sat down once and I figured out, it was like, we were doing like 300 quid a week on shopping. I was wondering where all the money was going, you know, on top of all the debt. And I was like, do you know, it's all going in there. And then thankfully they opened an Aldi nearby. I absolutely slashed the weekly shopping bill and then and I've kept a closer eye on it since and tried to meal plan and stuff like that.
One of the things I found that was a massive help, and it sounds proper daft, but getting milk delivered, because we go through a bottle of milk every day in our house. So every day we're going to the shop to get some milk, but at the shop we're also spending £30-40 on other things. From, just buying stuff for tea or getting whatever it might be.
Coming out with a power tool if you're in Aldi.
Exactly, yeah. Those middle aisle bags.
Centre aisle, yeah.
Getting milk delivered to the house meant that we were only going to the supermarket maybe once or twice a week rather than 6 or 7 times a week. And absolutely cut down on the amount of spending phenomenally.
I mean, the problem with budgeting more recently has obviously been that, you know, you get that email from your energy provider who says, you were paying £130 a month, it's now £400 a month. And you go, oh. Great, nice one.
What do I do with that? Yeah, no, I mean, that's
just turn that off, shall I?
Yeah, and it has been a huge. I mean, we're sort of making light of it, but it is a genuine heating or eating situation for some people, isn't it? And have you found that as the Andy's Man Club sessions have resumed after Christmas, that people are more mindful or worried about finances and that sort of stuff?
I think it's been ongoing for since before Christmas. You know, people were worried about having to spend money at Christmas, as we were talking about in the last episode, or those expectations, because they're worried how they're going to keep the house running at the same time. For myself, I've recently moved house into a rented property, and it's on a prepaid gas meter, and it's absolutely extortionate. It's those things are designed for the poorest among us, essentially, but they're on the highest tariffs as well, and we're putting so much money into this gas meter just to try and stop the kids from freezing, basically. We're not even having the heating on 24/7, just putting it on a couple of hours in the morning, a couple of hours in the evening. And it's having to be very, very conscious about when we choose to put that on, making sure we turn it off. Are we going to run out of gas? And then not only that, but to go and top it up, you've got to go to one of three shops anywhere near a 10-mile radius or something ridiculous. And they only accept cash as well, so you can't even pay on your card. So just making something that's already really inconvenient and difficult even more inconvenient and difficult. And it's just so unbelievably frustrating. I don't understand how it's got to that point in the first place. I really don't.
Stuff like that is just horrible. Like the fact that because they've been making people have them as well now, aren't they, in certain properties. And it is essentially just a way of punishing you for not having money in the first place, which is obviously is going to make your problems worse. It's not something, sadly, we can particularly solve here, but it's just one of those things that you think, that's just shit. It's completely unfair on people.
Do you have your little remote control for your smart meter? Do you have it out or is it in a drawer?
Do you know what? It never actually arrived. They came and fitted it and they said they were going to send it on and then never did.
Yeah,
we still haven't got it.
I think that you get it and there's a novelty aspect to it where you go, oh, I can see what I'm spending now. I mean, I'm talking before things went absolutely crazy in the last 6 to 12 months when we got ours. So this is interesting. And I ended up becoming a slave to it. Like, you know, you're like your dad walking around the house turning stuff off, saying it's like Blackpool Illuminations in here, you know, those sort of northern cliches. But I found myself doing it, like saying, bloody hell, the kettle's, it's 14p to boil the kettle and things like that. It's like, this is no way to live. It's no way to live. And I know everyone's like kind of been steering more towards sort of caution these days and be mindful of what you're spending. And in many ways, that may be one of the good things that does come out of what's happened with the huge energy costs, is that people are just a little bit more switched on to using stuff, you know, assuming you can afford to do that, because I'm a little bit more mindful. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, using the air fryer instead of putting the oven on and things like that. And
little things as well, like I've gone around draft proofing as well.
Yeah.
As a result of it, because you're like, wow, there is that kitchen door does have quite a breeze coming under it. I'm just going to sort that out while I'm thinking about this. But I think that in terms of like the kind of cost of living stuff, I feel like there's a difference as well between us talking about this stuff. And it really, one thing that really winds me up is politicians kind of making out that you just need to sort out your budget with stuff. Like talking down to people who have, they obviously, I mean, if you're an MP, you're on 80 odd grand and you get expenses to pay for your heating and stuff anyway. And then you see some of them going, well, really, people just need to budget properly. And,
cut out your avocado toast and your latte.
Exactly.
You can afford to put your heating on.
You've room for a flat screen TV. You've money for a flat screen TV, haven't you? As if you can get any other sort of TV.
Yeah.
In this day and age. But yeah, that sort of stuff. It really, really winds me up when you see people and say, oh, you can get Weetabix for 8p, why is anyone hungry? It's like, well, because you'd get scurvy and die of malnutrition if that's all you ever ate. It's like, great advice, thanks very much. You can get a bag of oats for 80p. It's like, yes, and there's nothing in it that is any good for you. Like, it will stop you feeling hungry, yes, but it won't.
Not a horse.
Yeah, but like, surely there's more to life than this, and yeah. you're not the person to tell me about it.
Yeah, there are difficult conversations around that as well about, and I think it's disingenuous, isn't it, to say you can just make your life a lot more simple, because you get accustomed to, you know, like you say, you walk into a supermarket and there's, you know, there's fruit, there's veg, there are your oats, there's pasta, but you don't want to have to walk past everything else just, you know, to get the basic discount line of pasta and oats and live off that, do you? It's a false argument to me. Mm. It's a fallacy.
It is, and the other thing is that it's those basic essentials that have been the highest price hikes, if you like. Mm. I think the cost of a cheap bag of pasta has gone up by about 200% in the last, you know, couple of years. So you used to be able to get those 3-kilo bags for about £1.50. They're about £4 now.
Yeah.
You know? And if somebody is living on those things, if that's what they need to survive, then their cost of living is increased exponentially, way more than people that are buying the weight, have had to move from Waitrose to Aldi or whatever.
Mm.
And yeah, I think there's a massive feeling that those in power are completely out of touch with those that are actually feeling the pinch directly.
Do you feel like you're in control of your money now?
I think it's one of those relationships where we both have a little bit of control. It controls me and I control it. Like I said, I have surplus to my wage once my bills have been paid. I'm very fortunate in that respect, but that surplus does not last.
Not with kids, not with
you know, everything else that goes with it. I like to get out and about. I need to escape the kids sometimes as well, you know. So be able to facilitate any sort of lifestyle, you need a little bit of surplus cash, don't you, really? And it tends to be that I have to plan very carefully when I'm going out, when I'm doing these things with the kids, whether it's going away for the weekend with the lads or whether it's taking the kids to football training. I've got to make sure that those things are all put to one side before I start going splashing out on a new set of headphones or whatever it might be.
One of those things that's hugely prevalent at the minute, gambling. And we should say, like, we've, you know, on our podcast, on this podcast, we've turned down loads of money from gambling companies for sponsorship. Occasionally there are dynamic ads served up that we can't do anything about. Mm. But Acast, who's our host, knows that we don't want gambling companies sponsoring us. So just getting that one out of the way up front.
The Phil Hay Show was for a time sponsored by Bet365 as well.
It's not our show. We couldn't do anything about
that. No, we couldn't really choose that.
No. But relationship to gambling is an interesting one. And I imagine it's something that features in a lot of blokes' minds in this day and age with the prevalence of like advertising around it and sport.
Absolutely. And we see so many guys coming through that have been stung by those hopes and promises of those gambling ads, if you like. I don't understand why they ban ads for cigarettes. They ban ads for alcohol and things like that. But alcohol, gambling, which is a lot more dangerous in the short term, is splattered all over everything. You can't watch a football match without, you know, having it rammed down your throat. And it really can be life destroying. It can destroy relationships. It can destroy jobs. It can destroy entire lives. And it very, very quickly gets out of hand from, you know, you lose a tenner, so you put 20 quid on to try and get your original tenner back. And, you know, I've heard some really...
Chasing losses.
Exactly, yeah. I've heard some really dramatic stories where people have gone through tens of thousands of pounds, taken their entire savings from the partner and out of joint accounts and things, and then been trying to chase those losses so that they can get away with it, so that the partner's not going to find out that they've just taken all the deposit for the house. And it's scary. It really is scary that people can get to that position so quickly.
I guess we're going back to political lobbying again there, the reason why the advertising's not being banned. And this is the thing as well, you don't want to be kind of nannying everybody. You want to give people the freedom of choice and acknowledge that most people don't have a problem with gambling or don't have a problem with drinking and things like that. It's one of those everything in moderation things, isn't it? But the more extreme end of the scale is quite terrifying.
I have no real moral objection to gambling, and I will have bets now and then, never very much, because it's just, I think it's... I'm fortunate that it's not really in my nature to risk more than I can afford because I'm thrifty, generally speaking. But the way that it is marketed, I follow an account on Twitter called Gambling With Lives, and their support for people who've like lost family members and stuff who've killed themselves due to gambling problems, and they kind of lobby the government and stuff to try and introduce more things. But they show, quite often will share a screenshot of a Premier League football match, and they'll say like the word bet is on screen 48 times there, because you can see it on every player's shirt, you can see it on the advertising boards, you can see it on the scoreboard behind, you can see it on fan shirts, and you think, it's too much. Like, there's an amount, I think, which you were... Like, bookies have always been there, but when I was a kid, the bookies was a place you walked into, and it was like a little...
Booze and fags.
A little, yeah, it was a little place on the corner where old men went in, whereas now it's on your phone, isn't it? You've got a bookies available 24/7, and 100 adverts a day telling you to have a little look at it. So I think it's something that the technology has overtaken the legislation, I think, for it. Because when it was just to put a bet on, you had to wander down to William Hill. Not saying no one had a gambling problem in those days, but it was a lot more limited because you had to actually get up off your ass and walk down the shop and put some money in and have a vague idea what you were doing. Whereas now it's sort of gamified, isn't it, gambling? Yeah. It's turned into, it's almost the same as you might pick up your phone and play Candy Crush or something. It's like I would just have a look at this. It's just something that's a bit of fun for you to do. But actually, within that app, you can, if you want, you can deposit a grand and lose it in 10 minutes. If you depend, because there's always the sport betting, but they all also have a casino site. They have like live roulette on them. They have all these different things you can do on it. And it's a dangerous thing, I think, to get people to try and get people into and to hang the sort of the temptation in front of people to go, oh, you can win 100 grand on this. If you want to have a look at it, it's up to you.
Ultimately, the bookies always win, don't they?
Yeah.
And that's why the biggest taxpayers in the UK over the last couple of years have been online betting companies. You know, they've paid hundreds of millions of pounds in tax, and that's probably why there's not going to be putting any legislation in place to prevent them from doing what they're doing. I just think, I morally don't have an objection to gambling like yourself. I know the dangers of it, and I think that more could be done to prevent somebody who usually puts on 50, 100 quid, whatever it might be, from depositing half the life savings in there because something's gone, you know, something's gone tits up and they're trying to find a way out of it. I think algorithms and the technology that we have today should be able to prevent those sorts of things. They should be able to see people's regular spending habits. And if something's out of the ordinary, it should be flagged and questioned rather than just letting them dip it straight in.
It does exist because it's the same algorithms that they're using to pull people in. So the technology does exist, doesn't it? It's the same stuff, like you get the dopamine hit from Facebook likes and things like that. It's the same sort of principle with gambling and dopamine hits from losing or winning, whatever it might be. And they just kind of, it feeds the addiction, or people who are prone to addiction, it's going to particularly feed it for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and it would be easy for them to do it just insofar as you can look, you can tell from someone's postcode what their house is likely worth. And if you can see someone's living in a house that's worth 150 grand and they've put 200 grand on this year in bets.
Bad idea, that.
Probably just need to tell them not to. Because there was a case in involving Paddy Power where it all kind of came to the public eye because he ended up in prison, did this guy, because he'd been stealing from work as a result of it. But he was living in a really ordinary house and he'd staked like over £1 million with them. And he had an ordinary job and they'd given him like VIP phone numbers he could ring if he wanted to put bets on. They'd taken him to the races and given him some football tickets and stuff.
So it's the equivalent of like the Las Vegas Whales, isn't it? Where they get their hotel stay for free and loads of freebies and show tickets and concert tickets because they spend so much.
Which is fine if you're a millionaire and you can, and 20 grand, 30 grand here and there, if that's nothing to you. But to lure ordinary people into it is horrible.
I'm pleased to say, despite my own wastefulness with plenty of money over plenty of years, that I've never really gambled. I've probably put on about 30 bets in my entire life.
So
it's just never something that's particularly engaged me. Which you would think, given how reckless I've been with money in the past, particularly sort of 15, 20 years ago, that maybe that would have been something I'd fallen into. But I'm pleased to say I haven't done.
I'll tell you one thing that changed my relationship with gambling, actually, was that when I started doing the match betting thing, you know, betting using free bets to bet on alternative outcomes, it's kind of a way you can gamble without losing money, more or less, but do research it properly if you're going to do it. But seeing how quickly you get those accounts banned when they can see that you're doing something that'll actually win you money, they're like, well, this isn't the sort of customer we want here. We want people who are going to lose money. We don't possibly want to be paying out here. And they can very easily at that point, it can be as little as winning 50 quid off them, but in a way that makes them suspicious and they'll go, right, banned. Whereas if you're pouring money into them, they'll be like, come on, come to the races, have this telephone number so you can put on some more bets. It's like, if you're a good customer to a bookie, you're a customer who loses money. And there's the stat about, I think 60% of their profits come from 5% of their customers.
Really?
Wow. So it just goes to show that there are people there funneling a huge amount of money in, and they're the ones that they need to look after for their businesses to function.
As a man who's been careful throughout his life, have you ever done anything outrageous in terms of money? I mean, just bearing in mind, people who watch our show will be aware, you repaired your own roof because the quote you got was too expensive. I just terrible thoughts of you being up there like covered in tar and falling off and all sorts of stuff. I'm not paying somebody to do that.
Yeah, that was a bit much. Well, I mean, this week I repaired my dishwasher. I changed my own car battery yesterday. So yeah, it's probably not a great advice to tell people to look on YouTube to try and fix stuff. Leeds United 20-year season ticket, that was a big
definitely a waste of money.
That was a big daft expense on it. That was stupid. But I knew I'd be buying it anyway.
Yeah,
it was fine. That was an investment, I would say, more than anything. I mean, house stuff, that's always expensive, isn't it? That's when I've got most stressed about money, I suppose, when you're taking the plunge on getting a house and getting a mortgage and being like, right, it's going to be this much. But as people have found out recently, if you're on a flexible one and interest rates go up, you're like, okay, so that becomes not 700 quid, it becomes a grand. If it goes to this, it becomes 1.5 grand. And the panic of that, I've always found stressful when I've got a mortgage. So I've always gone like the longest fix I can just to sort of buckle down for it.
Well, I'm looking, I locked in for 5 years before interest rates started climbing. I did it like 12 months ago, just before, because I was worried. You've rubbed off on me. You see, I've been listening to you all this time. We've been working together. Have you ever done anything like frivolous? Is there anything you look back on and thought, what a waste of money that was? Why did I do that? Or why did I buy that?
God, do you know what? I tend to buy stuff that's not that expensive. I'm trying to think if I've ever
bought
anything ridiculous for loads of money. I don't think I have. I suppose for me, it'd be something that other people would consider not that expensive. You know, like when I've just bought something, it might be like 50 quid and I'd be like, oh, I don't need that.
Well, the reason I ask you is because I've got a very specific example in mind of my own, which was I bought a jacket from Harvey Nichols in Leeds.
I've never done anything like that.
Which I wore it twice to go out in. It was like a suit jacket, but it was quite cool and cutting edge, which obviously you can tell I am. Mm. And it was like the stitching was all visible. It was almost like it had been turned inside out and half tailored. And it was really, really nice. But yeah, I wore it about twice.
How much?
It was about 120 quid.
Oh, it's not as bad as I was expecting. No, but mind you, what year was that?
Yeah, we're probably talking over 20 years ago now.
Oh, you could buy a terraced house for 120 quid in those days.
And do you know what I ended up doing? I ended up, when I saw it in my wardrobe, and I was never prepared to part with it. But when I finally did, I thought, I'm not even going to try and sell that on one of these reselling apps. I'm going to give somebody a bargain. Mm. And I just charitied it. So hopefully somebody at a charity shop will get a really nice, will have a nice, really nice jacket that I've sadly outgrown.
When I got married, I did get a made-to-measure suit, actually.
Yeah.
That was about 500 quid. That's probably the most frivolous thing because it's been worn seven times, I reckon, in my life.
All my daft money went on holidays, to be perfectly honest. Too many holidays. Mm. Too much fun. All right, anything? Have you gone frivolous on anything? Given that you found yourself basically without somewhere to live and, you know, trying to rebuild your life from the bottom, what was the thing that got you there that you go, fucking hell, why did I do that?
Before I got to that point, I did take out a loan to consolidate some of my credit card bills, and I had a couple of grand left over on the back of it. I got incredibly drunk one night and spent about 600 quid in a strip club in Halifax, and I didn't even get a handy for it. So, you know, it was not worth a single penny. But it was, yeah, I've never had a bit of regret like it in my entire life. That was one of those moments where I just, head in hands, thinking, why the in hell did I do that, honestly?
did you wake up and go, oh no?
Yeah, it was a massive oh no. It was a massive oh no that lasted a very long time. But yeah, the most expensive thing I've bought was probably my car. I didn't learn to drive until I was 32, and I bought a Skoda Octavia VRS, which I absolutely loved. Unfortunately, shortly after that, the fuel prices absolutely rocketed. Mm. We came into a cost of living crisis and I had to sell it. The only fortunate thing about that was that the second-hand car prices increased massively as well, so I got back every penny that I paid for it, but I missed that car still. And it was definitely worth spending the money on, unlike the strip club, but unfortunately it was just a lot more money.
I mean, what a way to finish.
Yeah, I mean, nights out, that, I suppose that would be the most frivolous stuff, because you never, well, I'd say you never need one. Maybe you do sometimes, but you can easily do like on a very modest night out now, you can do 50 quid, can't you? Which is, you know, it's a fair chunk of money, is that? And yeah, you can be like, oh, that's just gone, which is a bit of a shame. But I think I've always been all right at saying no to stuff as well. If someone's been like, trying to like, oh, there's a stag do going on of someone you vaguely know and it's going to be a week in Tenerife or whatever, you'd be like, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't need to spend that. That's going to be like 600 quid. I don't need to spend that. But you know, like for the stress it'd bring me long term, it's something I don't really want to do. As well, so is it, I know it's a tough balance in it between never doing it, because obviously never do anything, it's dead cheap, isn't it? But you know, try and I guess pick and choose it,
yeah,
and be it feel like you can say no to stuff. I think that is important though, because people do end up saying yes to doing stuff that they don't actually want to do,
yeah.
Like it's easy gone, is that money, and if you don't look back on it that strip club fondly, then
what was the name of it? Never mind.
Don't give me a plug. They've had enough money.
Tell us afterwards. 600
Anybody
quid.
Who lives in Halifax knows which strip club it was. Let's just say that much.
Oh, dear me. Well, we'll wrap it up there then. Good fun again. And we'll come back in February and talk some more. We're going to get some different people in as well from Andy's Man Club to tell some different stories as well. We'll decide on topic for February. Maybe we could do love because it's Valentine's Day in February. Do you feel the love?
God. it starts in a strip club in Halifax.
Just a reminder, Andy's Man Club, over 100 free support groups, over 120 now, you were saying, yeah, that meet nationwide, various places across the country, Monday nights from 7 for 2 hours, except bank holidays, andysmanclub.co.uk. And we'll see you in February.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.